Corey call from the same court and with many of the same issues. 11-1543. So, Mr. Wilmoth.
May it please the court, Ms. Mullen. This case is, again, a claim of procedural error by the same district court in presuming a sentence within the guideline range was the correct and reasonable one. This appeal is based on two categories of statements made by the district court at sentencing. The first category is an assertion a little bit different than you just heard about the guidelines. Quote, "There was a time when we didn't have sentencing guidelines. I remember those days fondly, fondly, Amen. But not now. We all wear the construction of the corset of the sentencing guidelines. That's just the way it is," quit quote. The second category of assertions by the district court that I wish to focus upon are the court's comments about, or I should say the court's view, of the parsimony provision within Title 18, Section 3553A, which requires a sentencing court to impose a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary to further the purposes of sentencing within that statute. Quote, "It's causing you a lot of time to be served regardless of how I cut this baby down the middle or in a section or whatever. We're talking only a few months difference between the government and your counsel, and I understand, Mr. Wilmoth, your counsel's arguments, but I'm not going to fiddle around with shaving this and shaving that off of here and so forth." The court continued, quote, "And it doesn't seem to me, Mr. Bohm," that's the government counsel, "that another 3, 4 months, 5 months, whatever, isn't going to make that much difference under the totality of this entire case. Same thing with you, Mr. Wilmoth," that's me, defense counsel, "going down those few months." Now, recall, however, quit quote, now recall, however, that the defense was actually asking for a 13-month variance from the guideline sentencing range. I guess that could be few. Maybe it's better described as moderate. It is the district court's apparent refusal to consider, to recognize the parsimony provision and this and another case that's pending before this court that is part of the basis of the defendant's request that the court invoke Circuit Rule 36 and reassign this matter to a different judge should you find remand to be appropriate. There's a pattern in pending appeals from the district court that sentences within the guidelines are presumptively reasonable. I think further there is the all-important interest of fairness to the appellants and the appearance of propriety to the public that Circuit Rule 36 be invoked in these and these related cases, including the case we just heard this morning. The court's key assertion about the corset of the guidelines demonstrates it felt there was an outside constraint. I think this is very clear. An outside constraint, kind of synonymous with corset, on his discretion that he was not free to set aside. The district court never stated which Section 3553 factors influenced its sentencing decision and instead placed undue weight on the guidelines in choosing the ultimate sentence. This record shows, I think, clearly that the guidelines carried more weight than any other 3553A factor in making the determination as to what sentence is sufficient but not greater than necessary to accomplish the purpose of sentencing.
Mr. Wilmoth, he talked about a lot of the factors, though, didn't he? He talked about your client's individual circumstances and the circumstances of the offense. Now, he didn't pull the labels out as he was doing it, but he – some might say he sort of rambled on about what happened in this particular case.
All positive, all uniquely positive in favor of the defendant, except one factor, and that was this defendant's longstanding addiction. And then I think important about that is after the court imposed sentence, it said, the quote, "the most important thing here is your rehabilitation," quit quote. There's some 3553 analysis right there.
But I'm almost hear you to be saying that it's as rigid as a corset in requiring the judge to stay within the exact language of 3553A that he has to sort of say, okay, now I'm going to talk about the fourth factor and so on.
Well, I mean, if you're asking whether I think there's a separate corset than what the court was using about the guidelines, and that my corset is that the court has to be confined to talking about 3553A factors, is that what you're asking me?
Yes.
Well, certainly not. I mean, but I would like, there should have been some talk, and I didn't use any corset language. The district, and I'm not using any corset language now, because that's language we shouldn't be using in sentencing, particularly when we're talking about the United States sentencing guidelines that are advisory and a sentence within them cannot be presumed to be reasonable. And if using the term, I remember the days before the terms, remember the days before the guidelines fondly, really fondly. I wish we were there now, is the inference. But now we're not. We have the guidelines, and they're a corset. How that conforms with this court's current sentencing jurisprudence is absolutely beyond me. I'm not suggesting, and if the court wants to say, well, you're
trying. Well, it's a constraint which was not in existence before. And
right. But this court indicated.
Isn't that what a corset is? I mean, right. As a generality, I don't see anything wrong with that analogy. But maybe, you can interpret it as you see fit, but. As a general idea, it just says, we didn't have all these constraints in the old days. We just did whatever we thought was right. Isn't that what he's saying? I don't know. Maybe not.
He is. But the fact of the matter is now, once again, after 2005, we don't have that constraint anymore.
Well, you still have the rigidity of having to go through the procedures of evaluating the various factors that the guidelines establish. There is that. And that's kind of what a corset was. It would establish a framework. It couldn't have to defer to my colleagues here. They may know more about it than I do, but it couldn't keep everything in place. Things came over the sides and so forth. It's not so rigid as.
Now, what does it mean? Excuse me. No, I didn't. What does it mean that they're advisory? That gives them some weight, doesn't it?
Perhaps I'm confused. What this record shows is that on the date of sentencing in 2011, some 6 years after the guidelines were determined to be advisory, and so the corset was lifted. The guidelines were the corset was taken off for the most part.
Loosened.
Sure. Right. But Judge, I don't think this record shows that this judge was using the guidelines as a starting point or benchmark, as it could appropriately do so when it uses the corset language. And it says we're bound by the construction of the course of the guidelines. That's just not that's not accurate sentencing jurisprudence in 2005. And the balance of the record shows he did nothing to dissuade a reviewer of this record that he did not consider a sentence within the guidelines to be presumptively reasonable because he believes they remain in 2005 a tight corset. If you say, well, wait a minute, he did talk a little bit about 3553 factors. He talked about one. He talked about rehabilitation. He said, as I indicated to you after he actually imposed sentences, the only problem you have or the most important thing in this case is rehabilitation. Well, the Supreme Court has said, and recently in the Tapia decision, that you can't utilize rehabilitation to not only impose a sentence, but to lengthen a sentence. So I think that kind of suggests that this court really didn't do any type of 3553A analysis and instead was, I won't say corset, we'll say confined by the guidelines because he said so and he wishes he wasn't. I don't think that can leave this court with a confident conclusion that it started with the guidelines, gave respectful consideration in the guidelines, and then considered the 3553A factors to determine if there should be a sentence in the middle or higher or lower or, crazy things, under the guidelines as requested by the defense. That's all that I have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Mullen.
May it please the Court, Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. Clearly, in this case, Judge Mills was in a talkative mood during this sentencing, and he was in a sharing mood. And judges are people, too. And again, we would ask this court, most of them, we would ask this court to look at the issue of the procedural soundness of this sentencing by looking at the entire sentencing transcript. So we have to look at the Corsett comment in context. And as the panel has pointed out, prior to saying that, the judge, and as Mr. Wilmoth pointed out, prior to mentioning the Corsett of the construction of the sentencing guidelines, the judge did say, I remember fondly the days before the guidelines. Judge Mills does remember those days fondly. We think what he meant when he talked about the construction of the Corsett of the sentencing guidelines is that prior to the guidelines and even post-Booker, the judge wasn't required to work through this extensive analysis in terms of calculating the guidelines range, resolving all of these objections, deciding what the appropriate range was, listening to all the discussion about this prior to getting there. When we talk about a Corsett, and of course there's I understand that maybe I have an advantage over the panel in terms of understanding undergarments for women, but when we think about a corset, it is an undergarment, and it's something that was used.
They come as a shock, but men wear corsets too. Present company excluded.
A corset is an undergarment. It's used to prepare for getting dressed, to prepare the body for the ultimate getting dressed and going out into the world, in the same way that the judge views the process of determining the proper the sentencing guideline in any particular case, that this is something that has to happen first. And there is a certain constraint to that. Judges need to do it. It's a process that they need to work through. And on this given day, Judge Mills was frustrated at that process. He was frustrated at the sentencing overall. He started out the sentencing transcript by saying, I do not like sentencing days. I don't like reviewing pre-sentence reports. I used to review them on the weekend. It ruined my weekend. Now I review them during the week, but this is not a happy day for any judge. This is a particularly troubling case because you have such strong family support and such strong letters that were so well written in support of you. So that was all the backdrop for this comment. So the real issue we think for this court is when you're looking at a procedurally sound sentence, when you have a sentencing process that goes on where a judge correctly calculates the range, again, that happened here, allows the party to discuss the factors, comments on those factors, and I want to focus on that in a minute, can one off-script, offhand comment unravel an otherwise procedurally sound sentence? Because the judge did discuss more than just mitigating factors. The judge did discuss the mitigating factors. The judge talked about the defendant's work ethic, family support, the fact that he pled guilty, and he also talked about his serious drug addiction and the seriousness of this offense. And the judge talked actually at length about the seriousness of this offense and having a marijuana grow operation in the house along with weapons and a small child. The judge lectured the defendant about what do you think might have happened when police officers come into a situation like this and they see weapons and drugs. They're going to assume the worst. They're going to react, to protect their own safety, and you've created a highly dangerous situation here. So there was some discussion at length about the 3553A factors here, and we would again suggest to this court that it's very important to look at the sentencing transcript as a whole and not to hold judges to some, unreasonable standard where they're not allowed to ever go off script or say anything that could be perceived as being ambiguous. What we really need to look at here is, did this judge understand that the sentencing guidelines are advisory? Defendants wanted to group these cases together for argument today, and we would suggest that they can't have their cake and eat it too. If you're going to group the appeals together, you have to be able to cross-check then what the judge says in other cases, and we know from the first case that the judge says, I understand that the guidelines are advisory. We would also suggest to this court that if this court should decide in this or any other of the Judge Mills sentencings that are now up on appeal and being cross-referenced in these appeals, that in a given case there was procedural error, that there's absolutely no reason to believe that that Judge Mills could not follow any guidance from this court in self-correcting. There just isn't any kind of a pattern of prejudice or bias or anything like that that's been established by defense counsel. Judge Mills is a very earnest, experienced, seasoned jurist, and we would suggest that this court engages in procedurally sound sentences. But should this court disagree in this or any of the other cases, the case should certainly go.
How about this rehabilitation point? I gather the point there is that you can't increase a sentence to accommodate rehabilitation.
But there's no suggestion.
Did he suggest that here?
No, he didn't suggest that here. And obviously we had that recent guidance from the Supreme Court, but there's no suggestion here. That wasn't part of the discussion of the 3553A aggravating and mitigating factors that the court discussed. The court often, I can tell you that Judge Mills often discusses the need for rehabilitation, but it's done after imposing a sentence when he's deciding or suggesting to BOP where a particular defendant should end up and what he hopes that the defendant does once he gets there. So oftentimes it's in terms of counseling the defendant to take advantage of the opportunities that are available to him in the particular facility where he should land. If the court has no further questions, I'll return the balance of my time.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Mullen. And Wilmoth.
This is the appeals in front of this court that are now three concerning three judge district court for the Central District of Illinois, Judge Mills cases. There's not any attack on that judge. I mean, the records are just what they are. In the United States versus Pennington, for which oral arguments already been heard, the district court said a request for a sentence 4 months on the low end of the guidelines was de minimis and absolutely silly, not worth the calculation. You heard something similar in the appeal of Aikens before this case. You have the course of the guidelines case. The records are simply what they are, but they establish a pattern which require the appellants believe in each of those three cases, remand to a different judge. We have crossed the boundary from method to substance. One final thought. I guess I'm just a little bit confused because I think we can solve Judge Mills's concerns or his frustration that Ms. Mullen said he had in this case. He doesn't need to remember anything fondly. We're there now. The guidelines are just a starting point. They're advisory. He can shed. There's no corset any longer. What he looks at is, and what he should be saying, is that we all wear the construction of the corset of Title 18, Section 3553A, in any meritorious sentencing arguments, not only from the government, but from the defense. Because, quite frankly, if you take this language literally in this case, the government wouldn't be able to obtain a sentence in excess of the guidelines because they'd be bound by the judge's concern of the corset.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mullen. And we'll take this case under advisement with the others. And proceed to the fourth case.